It's 2:30, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Approaches to Mobile Development. If that's what you're interested in, then you're in the right place, and I want to also welcome our online audience as well. We have four different institutions today that are going to be presenting: Open University of Catalonia, Messina University, Illinois Institute of Technology, and George Washington University. They're going to introduce themselves as they come up. We will go through all the presentations first and then have questions afterwards. I'd like to ask you all to make sure your cell phones are off, please. And the biggest job I have is to ask you to please make sure you fill out your session evaluations. They really are important. And you'll find the address for that on page 13 in your booklet. And you will also get an email for the general sessions later. So please go ahead when you leave here and fill out the evaluations. And with that, we'll get started with Gladys.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you all. I would like to present IWOC. The spelling is IUOC, but we name it IWOC, which is a project developed to enhance mobile learning at our university, the Open University of Catalonia, the UOC. Well, I am Gladys, and first of all, let me introduce you to my institution briefly. We are, as I said, the Open University of Catalonia, which is placed in Barcelona, Spain. We are a distance online university, which is wholly virtual. We have more than 50,000 students and 2,000 teachers who teach and learn through a virtual learning environment. We also have learning contents, virtual learning contents, in different formats, different digital formats, apart from the printed paper. We, of course, have the web format, but also we have the audiobooks, videobooks, PDF, DAISY format for blind people, and even we have formats specific for electronic ink, like Mavi Pocket and EPUB. So why are we interested in mobile learning? Well, as you know, nowadays we are in a mobile society. Every one of our students has a mobile phone, and around 7,000 of them use the internet connection through their mobile phones. And on the other hand, it's very frequent for our students to take advantage of their time commuting in the public transport, like in the underground or the train. And it's a fact to take into account, because it's very common in cities like Barcelona to use the public transport. And in order to develop this mobile learning environment, we use an approach based on a user-centered design process, which means that first of all, we have to know what are the needs and expectations of the real user. In this project in particular, we went with some students in their public transport, asking them about their learning tasks in general and specific in the mobile space. And after that, we used that information in order to develop and design the project. And what's IWOC's main goal? The main goal is to enable students and teachers to access to learning contents and alerts from the spaces of communication of a virtual learning environment in different mobile devices, such as the iPad tablet. And how does it work? Well, maybe the best way to show you is a visual one, so let me show you a short video. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Okay. And how is it possible? Well, the technology what is based and what I work is based is simply RSS. We have a virtual learning environment that is a customizable virtual campus that is composed by a widget container where you can find different widgets with the most important access of the most important information from the campus. And then what we've done for the mobile environment is taking this information through RSS from the widgets and converting it into a native application with a different look and feel. The video you have seen is about our first native iPad application and uses this RSS technology. And in this way, it's the very first. And I'm going to show you the main functionalities we know because previous study says that are the most important for the students and teachers. Here is the webmail from the university where you can answer and read email. Here is the access to the virtual campus with a virtual classroom, where you can see the notifications from the communication spaces. Here is the whole list of learning contents in different formats: PDF, web, Mobi Pocket, EPUB, video book, and audiobook. The news from the university, and finally the alerts, the appointments in your agenda. And finally, it's important to say that we have made a test pilot with the operator Orange Spain, and thanks to this agreement, 45 people, teachers and students, could test the iPad application for a term with a 3G iPad. After that, we made qualitative and quantitative assessment, focus group with teachers, user satisfaction scales, both students and teachers, and the main conclusion of the pilot test is that students and teachers evaluated the application iWalk for iPad very positively as a communication tool between them and the interactive support for learning. And finally, I have to say the next steps we are thinking, that are development of iWalk application for Android and smartphone tablets, optimization of the project for other profiles like teachers and management staff, and beyond connection to the mobile learning environment because of the technology of RSS that let us conceptualize very many applications apart from the one that we already have. That let us conceptualize new pedagogical apps. For more information, Learning Technologies, UOC Edu, iCommunity Blogs, UOC Edu, and my email. Thank you.
My name is Jerry Goldman. I'm a research professor of law at IIT Chicago Kent College of Law. And I'm here with Francesco Stagno del Contres. Thought we'd say a little bit about ourselves. I also direct the OEA project at Chicago Kent. And for 36 years, I was a political scientist at Northwestern University. Ciccio.
Thank you. So welcome. My name is Francesco Stagno del Contres, and I'm from the University of Messina in Italy. And today I'm far from my home, from my country, because I want to share with you the amazing experience and we had in leveraging mobile device technology to improve experience of both teachers and students. So all of us know that this is the past. And today, computer like the Mac Air or the laptop you hold is the present. But really, the future comes in the hand of mobile devices like the iPhone, the iPad that Steve Jobs left to us, the Android.
But Chicho, that's today. What's the real future?
That's the future today, Jerry. That's the future today. But our vision tomorrow may be something like that. A mental implant. So instead of calling me, my son can think about me and I immediately receive some kind of signal or, you know, in my mind directly. But let's come back to the future today for a moment. So how many of you here got an iPhone or an iPad? Okay, thank you. Android.
Oh, good.
Okay, good. Today we have a good example in this room of what the world is outside. So most, I can see, what do you say, most of iPad, iPhone?
65, 70%.
65, iPhone. 70, but all of you got a mobile phone or a tablet or something mobile that you can use in your daily life. Now, what I usually say what I usually say during classes, before classes, is take out of your pocket your mobile phone and switch the phone on, but please in silent mode. So you can use it during the classes, during this presentation to browse the virtual market and download the apps we are going to see. And that what I like to refer to leveraging the mobile technology for teaching. So try to tell our students while they are in classes to use more the mobile phone, not to connect to Facebook, but we are thinking on a better way, in better way. So today this is the roadmap of what we are talking. We are taking a short look at the OEA project website and the apps that are connected to the project. And the one on the right side, it's a dessert for my city, and I'm going to tell you how this is connected with the presentation and technology later.
So a word about the OEA project, which is something I started about 18 years ago. It's a multimedia database devoted to the Supreme Court of the United States. It consists of about 10,000 hours or so of Supreme Court audio going back quite a bit, 1955. It's all been transcribed to about 110 million words, every speaker identified and time code at the end of every sentence. And the OEA project itself covers everything the Supreme Court has done from 1791 to the present that has any bearing on instruction today. And it gets about 26 million page views in the last 12 months. So it's a pretty active site. Now, this is the mobile app experience that we want students to share and other users, Supreme Court junkies, is to operate within the confines of these devices to flip, tap, and listen. Our first application, Pocket Justice, was released in March 2010, and it's focused solely on constitutional law, covering that period. The corpus of constitutional law seems to be about 650 cases. The full version of it is less than the price of two lattes, but there is a free edition available, and it seems to be fairly widely used. It also won the American Political Science Association CQ Press Teaching and Learning Prize last year, and we're quite proud of that. The other application that we released just this year is called OEA Today. And this focuses only on the current business of the Supreme Court. That's about 80 cases per year, covering the terms 2010 and 2011. And best of all, it's free. Chicho,
yeah.
Bring you back. Thank you.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to leverage technology to do this. Okay.
All right. Sorry about that, folks. I can't tell you how many times we worked through this. All right, let's just work from here.
Yeah.
Get back down to me. Most important, these apps were made in Italy.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. This is a short movie that will explain, give you the experience of our latest app, Oye Today. And you can see that you can scroll through the cases that the court has on its docket, has prepared for oral argument, has argued but not decided. You can see that we have actively following two terms of the court. You can specify favorites. The favorites contain abstracts of the cases written in plain, strunken white English. You can also locate where a case began. It's kind of a challenging question for people to understand, where did a case begin? Where did the cause of action arise? You can also share this information on your social network. You can print from the application. You can get a copy of the decision that the court renders in plain HTML within 15 minutes of release. Even though the court releases as PDF, we think it's much easier to share and to excerpt using plain HTML. You can also get alignment of the justices' votes, learn something about them, know their ideologies and where they stand against each other. So it's really a complete package that provides information, and perhaps the most elementary element, given this is a multimedia project, is this.
We'll hear argument first this morning in case 09-10245.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
So
William Freeman's plea agreement. This case asked the court to decide whether the fact.
So you can skip around to any part in the audio because it's synced to the transcript. You can search the transcript. You can excerpt turns. You can excerpt segments. You can excerpt and share non-contiguous segments and deliver them as email attachments either to yourself or others to repurpose in any document you wish. So we're trying to make this a fully functional and engaging environment for students or Supreme Court junkies or citizens to make use of these resources. And I think there was some pretty clever engineering to enable us to do this. And there seems to be some response in the marketplace for free apps, as we'll explain in a moment. Okay.
Yeah. So here are a couple of numbers on our download. That's my new remote control. So iPhone and iPad and both Android download are pretty good because we are, you know, close to the 30,000 unit downloaded. And here I will fly through this table, but it's quite important to see. This is a comparison table between the OEA project website and the two apps. You can see, like, the green sign will put in evidence how much more services we got on the app than on the website. And we should skip that, and so we can arrive at by the end.
Right.
So the secret recipe from this experience is that the dessert you can see, we make a comparison. This is called Granita Caffè con Panna. It's a blended ice granita, half. And the other part is whipped cream, and I will invite you in Messina to take a taste of this. But if you run a website and you want to introduce an app, our recipe here is that counting too much services on the app and less on and to the website and less on the app is not what we want. And on the opposite side, too much app services instead of with a bad website is either bad. What we want to have, it's a balance here. We want to create balance between services provided on the website and services provided on the app.
We'd like to thank the IIT Chicago King College of Law, which provided support to create the OEA Today, and Justia for their support to create Pocket Justice. Know that they're free. Share them. Use them. Give us feedback. And if you want to learn about our own experience in putting this together, we'd be happy to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And sorry for the mix-up. Yeah. You want the movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Movie first.
Hi, I'm here on behalf of the two other members of our group that are presenting. They've joined me during the question and answer session. Our presentation is actually going to be on video, but I just wanted to give you a very quick introduction. It's basically our strategy of developing a mobile app in the absence of an overall mobile strategy on our campus.
Today, we'll be discussing our approach to developing a successful mobile application for the George Washington University. We'll discuss our goals, our solution, and our successes. Our goal when we started this project was to do a couple of things. We wanted to harness the imprint of mobile devices in a collaborative way across our campus and develop a cost-effective mobile application for the GW community while leveraging the student labor pool. For us, this was a win-win solution. The students would get real-life marketable skills and experience as they developed the app, and the GW community would get a valuable resource. As you may know, both the new Media Center Horizon Report and the ECAR study of undergraduate students in information technology indicate that users on campus increasingly expect anytime, anywhere information to data and services on mobile devices. We did a survey of incoming freshmen at GW this summer. The results were similar, but higher than the numbers reported in the ECAR study. 98% of the incoming freshmen indicated that they own a cell phone. 75% indicated that they own a web-enabled phone or mobile device. Our solution was to create a mobile app for GW. One of the main things we considered as we were developing this app is the question of native versus mobile web. We decided on a hybrid model, combining the mobile web presence into the native app. We wanted to leverage the phone's built-in features, the great distribution mechanism that both the iTunes Store and the Android market provide, and we also wanted to be able to have features that allowed the app to work in an offline mode. The most important component of our work was identifying or creating data sets and mobile-enabled web pages to integrate into our app. We wanted to make sure that the infrastructure that was developed was flexible enough to allow us to easily integrate and develop for new mobile devices and technologies. The two students we hired to work on this project started to work full-time on the project during the summer of 2010. We launched a beta version of the iPhone app in October of 2010. The app was officially launched in January of 2011. The Android version was released in April of 2011. The app currently has 20 different modules. Users can access academic course listings, campus map with building locations, university news sources, campus advisories, campus directory, shuttle information, and more. One of the main things we focused on as we were developing this app was to make sure that the data elements from one module could easily be used in other modules. For example, when a user clicks on the course module, they'll see a listing of courses that they can click on to see details about the course. The course detail page has information about the course location that a user can click on to see where the course meets. This is tied to the Maps module of the app. From the same page, a user can also click on the instructor name to get more information about the office location, phone number, email address of the instructor. This is tied to the directory module of the app. The app has allowed us to connect with different university constituents in unprecedented ways. We'll now hear from Ahad Utalahun, who was one of the lead student developers working on the iPhone app.
Working as a student on R&D projects here at GW was an amazing experience. It created an opportunity for me to learn new programming languages and tools like Objective-C and the Apple iOS SDK that are not normally taught in the traditional academic environment. Having this kind of opportunity is a phenomenal experience for any student.
The GW mobile app has been downloaded over 11,000 times in the 8 months since our January public launch. It's been downloaded in 52 countries. 80% of the downloads are on the iOS platform and 20% of the downloads are on the Android platform. When a user downloads our app, we ask them to identify their user role. This allows us to use Google Analytics to observe how each user role interacts with our app. The two most active user roles within the app are current students and parents. Current students represent 64% of the activity, and parents represent 9% of the activity. The three most used features by current students are courses, maps, and news. One thing that we were very surprised by was the high use of the app by parents. The two features used most by parents are the news features as well as the university alerts. The analytics data allows us to see interesting activity by users surrounding different events on campus. For example, when we are experiencing a weather pattern such as a hurricane or even the earthquake we experienced this summer, we see a spike in usage of GW alerts. Around the beginning of the semester, we see an extreme increase in the use of courses. People are going to look, they're able to see what courses are open, what courses are closed, as well as where those courses are located. Because our development cycle is very flexible, we're able to add in features for different university events. This summer we added a feature for orientation. During orientation, we saw a spike in use by parents for that specific information. The data shows us that university constituents are really using the app on a daily basis for very different needs. We've received very positive feedback from the GW user community. This feedback comes in over Twitter and also through the built-in feedback tool that allows the user to email us feature requests or just their feedback in general. A week after our official launch, the student newspaper wrote an editorial where they said the GW mobile app, from its creation to its content, demonstrates a commitment to student success. They also applauded the use of student developers in the creation of the app. Shortly after the launch, we started receiving feedback email from students asking for an email feature to be built into the app. This surprised us since GW is on the Google email platform. We figured students would either IMAP their email to their device or use the Google web app for accessing their email. More and more emails poured in from students asking for email to be added to the app. Since we've added it, the use of email is now the third most used feature by students.
We have a flexible, user-centric, and data-driven update strategy. We rely on feedback and requests we get from users to determine functionality and priorities for future releases. In terms of our future plans, there are a couple of things we'd like to do. We'd like to work on integrating the app with teaching and learning tools on campus, particularly our LMS. We're working on allowing users to personalize the Springboard and the modules based on their institutional role or user preferences. We'd also like to add push notifications to the Campus Alerts module. Finally, we'll continue to closely monitor user feedback and usage metrics when determining future priorities. Thank you for coming.
Thanks. I've been given the role of opening it up for questions now.
Who's moderating the questions here?
Do you want to
Yes.
Are you going to moderate the questions, or do you want us to handle it?
We do.
There's one right here. Oh, okay.
Could you go to the microphone?
So that the online audience can hear the question. It's right back in the middle of the room. Thank you.
So with regard to the GW application, using a hybrid model, so you were targeting two platforms. What kind of a development platform did you use to do that?
By hybrid, we meant that we incorporated into the native app mobile web presences that already existed.
Okay.
So we initially targeted the iOS platform and then released for the Android platform.
But which development platforms were you using? Were you using the SDKs for the iOS?
Yes, and Android, both the native SDKs.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm from NYU. That's very generic for me to say that, actually, now, because there's a lot of Chris's over there. I have a question. We were actually at NYU looking at developing our own mobile app for our university, and one of the first things that we run into the problem is there are so many services, and everything wants to get tied to this one thing. How did you guys figure out what you wanted to scope in into just the project? So, for example, for Georgetown University, since that's whatever it is that you have, it seems like that's what we want. So if you could explain that process.
We're the other George. We looked at the things that we thought would be important for the university constituents, and some of the things that were obvious were courses, maps, news sources, alerts, emergency numbers. And once we rolled out the app, which had about 12 or 13 modules at the beginning, we got a lot of feedback from users as to what else they thought was important to them. And based on the priorities that we had set for those, we started to release those things. So user feedback was a very important part of incorporating those things on there.
Hi, I have a question about the OYE. Your strategy was pretty clear with the Pocket Justice, where you had very typical a free version and a paid version.
Mm-hmm.
Now for the OYE today, you have just a free version. Are you what's your strategy? Did you get funding for that?
The law school felt that it was a good public service and a way to promote the law schools, so it decided to endorse the creation of it. And Francesco's group takes care of all the updates, and we have plans to push video as part of our grand scheme to dominate Supreme Court multimedia. And we're pretty good. When the court releases audio at the end of the week, within 2 hours we have an aligned transcript and audio synchronized and downloadable.
It was interesting to hear that the students did the development at George Washington. Who did the development for the other two speakers?
Oh, I did it in Messina in Sicily, and as part of a grant from the IIT school, as Jerry said. So we are a small group of developers, and we are taking over this both projects, actually.
Now, the reason why we chose to work with these Sicilians is while they don't, they haven't developed the devices, they use them far more, and they're far more integrated. Mobile devices, telephony was far more integrated in their culture than in ours for years.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was for the Granita.
Oh, yeah, it really was for the Granita.
No, yeah, that's... That's the reason, mainly because probably the Italians, you know, that was an article in the Corriere a week ago who said that 39% of people got a mobile phone, use a smartphone, and on a number of 100 people, 100% of people over 18, 39% is a good number of people either in using mobile devices. So I think that we know how to use mobile devices, and we started using that in my university about 7 years ago now. So
yeah,
that's mainly the reason.
In our case, it was a collaborator, a phone operator, who made us the application. But the functionality we have is the result of a user-centered design process. We don't choose anything like we want. It's a study. We have previous studies with the students and teachers, and after that we develop what we have found. It's really important.
I'm highly interested in the approach that you use at George Washington for student development. Do you view that as being a recurring maintenance approach that you're going to take with the application, or do you have other ideas in terms of using full-time staff in your IT department?
At GW, we regularly hire students to do numerous R&D projects for us. So the way we approach this is there's always a cycle of students coming through our process. So there's going to be a handoff. There is definitely some oversight from full-time staff members on the project, but the students were doing the most of the work on the project. And so, for example, the student that was on the video actually has graduated from GW this summer and has now joined us in a full-time capacity.
Yeah, I had a question for George Washington University as well. You guys mentioned the native versus mobile, which I think is a question a lot of people are asking, and I find a lot of people are going towards the merged approach. So I was wondering, with that, merging web in, were you basically integrating web views of existing mobile applications, or was some of that data served through web services maybe, or how was that, how did that interface?
Web services for some of the things. Some of them were web views of existing mobile pages that had been created. Some were created based on specs that we gave departments as to what would make it look nice on the devices that we're building for.
And with that, was there a standardized sort of interface that you had, or a standardized mobile system, or just
we initially started with the iPhone interface, so most of the specs that we're giving them were based on that resolution.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Could you go to the? Could you stand up and go to the microphone, please?
I was just wondering, in your development cycle, what type of surprises that you ran into that you weren't expecting? And if you would do this all over again, what would you do that was different?
And this is directed to?
George.
Okay.
They weren't really, I think one of the surprises probably was positive in that the majority of the feedback we're getting was very positive, and in fact, if you could even call it negative, the feedback we were getting was, why didn't you include this feature in the release that you had? So that's all I could think of. There weren't that many surprises. There were things like the shuttle stuff, that information that we're working on. It's very important. GW was working with a vendor to try to get the data for us. The data that we're getting wasn't really that great, so we had to kind of like clean it up and make a view that was presentable on the devices. But I wouldn't say we had anything that was a surprise. Jared mentioned in the presentation the people that were using the app, the high percentage of parents that were downloading and utilizing the app.
I have two questions, one for Jerry and one for GW. The question for Jerry is, what feedback have you received from faculty members, if you've received any, from across the country that have used OES? And then my question for George Washington is, since a lot of those app features are also web page features, on my campus, the web content is controlled by the PR office, not by the IT office. So I'm wondering if there was any internal politics over what you're doing with web applications and the webmaster for the university web pages. So.
With regard to faculty, well, there's clearly an age distribution issue. Older faculty are clueless on how to use these devices, so it's really directed more towards students or younger faculty, and they're pretty keen on it. I think we have pushed the idea that atomizing these 10,000 hours of audio into smaller chunks provides more utility, and younger faculty and students clearly understand that and take advantage of it. The one downside is that the clips in our original build exist on the device, so we generate the clips this way. But in our next release, they'll be server-side, and then we can track what clips are being made and how often, and have more data to understand their utility.
Unfortunately, one of the things that we didn't get to do in this presentation was say everything we wanted to say. One of the main things we did as we were developing this app was create partnerships with different constituents on campus. For example, the Division of Information Technology, External Relations, and so on. And once we'd created those partnerships and we'd shown them some working prototypes of the app, all of the groups were very supportive and gave us all of the information that we needed. So it's all about building the partnerships.
So from the little bit of time you've had to show us what you're doing, most of it looks like consuming through the mobile app, and I'm curious if you have any plans to develop ways for students or others to create content locally and then send that up.
Is this, and this is directed to George?
To any of you.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll take a crack at that. When we can collect data on the utility of the clips we make accessible, I think that will have some real value. But we're not at that point yet. We certainly anticipate achieving that goal. Now that we have a RESTful state API, we can render that on the server side, and I expect within the next 4 months we'll be good to go. That was a problem in development because Android doesn't makes it impossible to create a clipping structure internal to the device, so that clipping is only available in iOS, but now that we will deliver this all on the server side, it'll be seamless across both platforms.
Nope. Collecting data?
Yes, we are. We're looking at ways we can leverage the devices at either allowing students to record stuff and push it up to servers that are GW, or creating applications that would allow them to use it as study guides where they could push it out for other students to share.
I was curious about the turnaround time that you guys had from inception and discovery on the project and how many programmers that you have on each team. I'm the lone programmer at Widener University.
And this is directed to all of us?
To each of, yeah, just okay. To compare the magnitude of each project with the turnaround time and the personnel on staff.
Chicho?
How many people working?
How many people and how long from concept to release?
So I would say we're working on the project and four people, one for the development on the iPhone application, iPhone and iPad. Another one for Android. We got a lot of help for server side from the OYA project, and I want to give you credit for this. So that's the first people, and the fourth people, it was me on usability and design, and the whole process for took an average of between 2 and 3 months for a first stable beta. And another month for the review and to have something, you know, usable and available for download on a virtual market. So a total, I would say, 3-4 months.
There's several answers to your question. It depends on which aspect you're asking. If it's just the hardcore programming part, there are just two people working on it. But then there's the testing, reviewing, working with other departments, talking to other constituents, and so on. I'd say roughly about 5 people worked on it, but full-time, two students and one person, or 2 people just overseeing the project.
And how long did it take?
Approximately a year.
In our case, it was part work from the university and part work from the operator. I think in the university we were 3 people, and maybe 2 in the operator who are programmers. I think one was developing iOS and one was developing Android. And now they are going to give us the code. And we're going to take care of it. I think we are going to be two more people. And the operator took, I think, a year to develop.
And then sort of along the same lines, because there's so much fragmentation between in the Android operating system, and you have to sort of take into account the different screen sizes and different capabilities, and then iOS does come out with updates just like Android does. How do you guys account for all of that system operating system, like fragmentation, and when updates come out, what's usually the development time that it takes to work on an update to the application when these kinds of updates do come out? And then sort of tagged onto that, what's the support footprint for maintaining that application throughout the year, like your client services or, you know, your own group when problems arise? How do you guys deal with that?
That sounds like more than one question. So about the resolution, you know, working on iOS devices is much more easy for people as to do code and to people where to work and design. About the Android side, there are very helpful guidelines on the available, but what we have done for in developing the OEA project apps is to test each apps on several devices, three or four at least, and that I will solve the problem on taking care of all the sizes. But basically they are working on three different sizes, and just the problem, another problem is about the CPU there are on the devices. There are several, so since we are leveraging lots of you know, native functionality, they may work slowly in a very tiny and small phone, and better in the new, you know, brand new Samsung bigger screen and things like that. So Android?
Well, in our case, by now we just have the iPad application, but I think we've tried to design because our application is mixed, is hybrid, and mostly it's very liquid, the part that is web. The Android we will see, because we are right now we haven't upload to App Store either, and we are in the process.
There are two other Georges with me, so I'm going to see if they have any comments to make. But I'll quickly try to answer your question. The key is testing. We, particularly on the iOS platform, I'll give you an example with the iOS 5 release. We started testing with the first beta release of the iOS 5. So start early and continuously test, and if there are any issues, you'll know about it ahead of time, and you can release it as soon as the new iOS is released. Just as developers, we have access to the beta releases. Any comments, Jared? The other George will.
Yeah. On the Android side is where we've seen the most, you know, broken pieces when an update happens or a new phone comes out, and we're just encouraging people to use that internal feedback button, and that's where most of that's coming back. Users are saying, "Hey, this is no longer working for me," and we try to get that up as fast as possible. The nice thing on the Android side is we can push something to the market immediately, and it's available. On the Apple side, it's anywhere from the fastest it's ever been is 4 hours of approval, but the longest has been like 21 days. But on the Apple side, we really haven't had much break with any of the updates.
And I think there was one other question you had on your is support. We really haven't had issues with support, and that's probably you asked a question about surprises. There really aren't any questions about support. Students pretty much figure it out, and they're using all aspects of the app. Looks like we're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you.